Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by the Farmers Market Farm Stand at 76 Montauk Highway in West Hampton, New York. That is 76 Montauk Highway, West Hampton, New York. Open in April through the season.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Sharp and hot with Chef Family. Sharp and hot with Chef Family.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is episode number 30, following a long and lazy Memorial Day weekend. It was lovely. I did nothing. I sat by our pool, which is open, and it was glorious, and watched my little kid swim around. I hope you guys all enjoyed your Memorial Day weekends. I am very excited by my guest today, who is joining me live in the studio. I just sent out an Instagram picture of the cover of You Have It Made, cookbook author and host of Ellie's Real Good Food, Ellie Krieger. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
What a pleasure.
So you are one of my heroes, and I've been following your career for quite a while because you are charming and warm, and you have managed to make that into a public career, which is awesome, especially that it has to do with food.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. Wow. I didn't expect that.
Oh, well, it's true. And so I'm wondering, like, when you look around at the things that you've accomplished, so you have had success on the Food Network, you are now on PBS with Ellie's Real Good Food, you have cookbooks under your belt. When you look at your life and you hear people, I should say I was invited to your launch party for Ellie's Real Good Food a couple of weeks ago at sponsor Natural Gourmet Institute, and he read your bio, and you were like, you could see, like, you're like, that's me. What does that feel like to hear that read back to you?
It honestly feels kind of overwhelming to hear it, like, in one fell swoop. And it feels kind of overwhelming in terms of just, it's a lot. It's been a lot of work. I work really hard.
Right, yeah.
And I work very, very hard. But I have to say, it's that adage, kind of, which I will butcher, because I don't know the exact adage, but if you do what you love, then you don't work a day in your life, kind of thing. Well, I do feel like I work, and I do know the difference between working and playing. I think that's important to having a good life also. But I do work really hard, and I am fortunate to have these wonderful fruits of my labor. Like, I'm so proud of everything, and also I feel so great because I do believe that it's beyond a career in food for the sake of it. Because I'm a dietitian, and I care so much and so passionately about people's health and wellness and well-being, and getting away from these extremes that we live in our society, because that's a whole big part of it for me. I feel like I'm making a difference in people's lives, and that's huge. I mean, I feel tremendously gratified by that.
It's so true, because I was on Instagram this morning, and I fell down some, like, hashtag rabbit hole, as you do, and somebody had put up a picture, and she wrote it was something like, the struggle between body shape and tasty food is real. And I was like, oh, I'm so sad for that
wow.
feeling, because I don't believe that, and neither do you. So talk to that a little bit, like, how...
Wow, that, I have to see that. I feel like out to that person.
I'm going to make a note and find it again.
Well, it's a problem. I mean, one of the things in our society is it's sort of set up. We're sort of living in this framework where we are set up in the media, in things that we see, in what people talk about, that either you have to choose between delicious, which is a circle over here on the left, or healthy. Right? And then you have to choose between those two things. And somehow delicious food is set up to be the stuff you really want, the stuff that's luscious and passion-inducing, that's kind of sexy, but that somehow you have to feel guilty about, right? So there's like this moral moralism in there too. Yuck, right? And on the other side is healthy, which is the stuff that you should be eating, that's good for you, but is somehow kind of boring and tasteless and just too perfect. But the truth of the matter is that these two circles meet, and in the center is what I call the sweet spot. And that's a sweet spot where delicious and healthy meet. And literally, it's been my mission to live there as an individual, because I've actually been on this diet roller coaster. I've been in this world where I was an overweight child and I loved food passionately and had to learn how to love it in a healthy way. And I had to find that sweet spot for my personal self. And then I studied nutrition, clinical nutrition. I mean, I went the whole hardcore science route studying nutrition. But found a way to love food in a healthy way, found a way to hit that sweet spot. And literally, it's at the core of everything that I do, from all of my books to my new show. It's actually the tagline of my new show, Hit the Sweet Spot, Where Delicious and Healthy Meet.
And on the show, you interact directly with people who have real eating dilemmas, right? So what's your favorite one that you've encountered so far?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. There's so many. And it's all stuff that people can relate to. So it's nothing too, you know, out there, right? Like you're allergic to 21 different things, right, or something. But so, I mean, one in particular that I love is this family that just has an out-of-control sweet tooth. Like, they're baking all the time. They feel like they eat sweets all the time. So I help them find ways to, you know, satisfy that sweet tooth in a healthier way. So I made these like fig and ginger truffles, for example. We had them at the party. I don't know if you got a chance to try one.
No, I only had your savory stuff, which was all spectacular, by the way.
Oh, cool. Thanks. Yeah. So this is just, it's so easy. You just take figs and some crystallized ginger, a little bit of cinnamon and a touch of honey, and you puree it. And the figs kind of, it all sticks together beautifully, and it has this gorgeous sweetness. Most of the sweetness is coming from that whole fruit that has so much fiber and nutrients, but it's decadent and luscious. And you roll it up, and then you dip it in dark chocolate, and there are little truffles. It's candy, you know, that's good for you. So that was kind of fun. I gave them also, taught them how to make a fabulous banana bread, which I love banana bread. And another kind of issue, let's see, this is a fun one too. Another episode we did, carnivore versus herbivore. So it's a married couple. They're happily married. They make two different meals every single night because she's a vegetarian and he's a huge meat lover.
So Jack, our engineer, this is Jack's life. Jack and I have talked extensively about living with an herbivore because his partner is, and he is a carnivore.
Yeah.
So what's some advice that you can give?
Well, so I set them, we'll have to hook you up with this episode. It's coming up in a couple weeks, but it's basically, I share with them these meals that are essentially, a couple different solutions. One solution is side dishes that are essentially complete protein. So like bean and grain and vegetable dishes that she can have as her main course, and he could add sliced steak, for example. And this way they're at least eating both the same thing, so they can customize the protein. Another thing is like doing rice bowls.
Where, we have been living on like rice bowls and saute, like, or stir fry rice bowls. This has been like a revelation in our house. It comes together so fast.
Yeah.
And it's like colorful and decorative for my little kid. And like, yeah. So what are your tips?
And it's nice because it's sort of like taco night where everyone can pick their own toppings. So you could have, you know, some shredded pork for him, or maybe there's some tofu, marinated tofu for her, and they can each, essentially they're eating the same meal, but they're customizing their toppings. So things like that.
One of the things that I have been working myself to get people to think about is meat as a garnish, instead of meat as your, like, the thing that takes up the biggest space on your plate. And I eat a ton of animal protein. I love it. I like to know where it comes from. I do the best I can. I'm very pragmatic about it. But in our house, we've been doing like a lot of work to try to figure out how do we think about this meat as a garnish. And we bought some pork cutlets at the farmer's market. And my husband made these like beautiful Korean rice bowls with all the different little bits of grilled eggplant. And then he made the pork as like the little sprinkle topping on top. And it was like so good. And it's so fun to like live what you've been preaching to people and be kind of conscious of it for a moment. Be like, this is, you're not neglecting yourself of anything by just making some more practical choices.
Right. And what I love about what you're saying is that it takes us out of this mentality of all or nothing. And this is something that I think really plagues us, that it keeps us on this diet roller coaster, which is emotionally exhausting, physically unnecessary, and can be, you know, very hard on your body too. That either, I feel like in this world that we live in, we're either binging or cleansing.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, hello, what if we just like didn't do either of those and we just ate?
And we fly to Europe where they seem to have it figured out and everyone's like, oh, I want to eat like a French person. But then back here, it's like, but I can only do that on one day a week on my cheat day.
Right. And a lot of it's, you know, practical stuff. So, I mean, some of it comes down to, as you know, you're a busy mom, you're working, you're juggling. Me too, right? And that's why, like, for this book, You Have It Made, I'm solving, like, practical, I think, barriers that people face. So it's like, you know what? I come home 6 o'clock. Oh, my gosh. I didn't even think about dinner. Now what? And so it's about how do you tackle those kinds of practical everyday things? Because you can have this desire to change and make some moves, right? But you need to have the practical steps in place too. So I really try to help people do that. And that's what I do on the show with people. And some of it, you know, is like with You Have It Made, one of my big solutions is like stocking your freezer.
Yeah.
And yeah. So I have pretty much everything in You Have It Made. I also have lots of salads actually for summer. I think we don't normally think of salads as make ahead, but there's like this great corn and edamame salad. And that's an example that might be great for the herbivore carnivore thing.
Right. And then he can like grill some shrimp or grill anything, really, any animal protein, and throw that on top. And the green salads too. Like, we make green salads on Sunday when I have my act together. I don't want the perception to be that I do this every Sunday. But if you don't put the dressing on, the green salad will last for 6 or 7 days. And then you just dress it when you want to.
Right. And it saves you, right? I love to make also gazpacho. That stays in the fridge for several days if we don't eat it all first.
Right.
That usually doesn't last that long.
I have like found myself running home in exactly the situation that you're talking about. Like, I'm coming up, we have this giant hill that I have to drive over from where I parked to get on the train to home. And at the top of the hill is a Whole Foods. And I spend so much money stopping at Whole Foods for like pre-made, I'm like embarrassed to say this on the air, like pre-made burgers. And I like buy the burgers. The rolls are right there at the meat counter. Like, they see me coming and they know.
But you know what? It's interesting you say you're embarrassed about that, because I think this is another problem. And this comes back to the sense of extremes. So we're not only binge and cleanse, right? We're also perfect or bust.
Yeah.
Right? So I feel like personally, I love, every Friday is my local farmer's market. My favorite thing to do is buy all my produce with the dirt still clinging to it, and I take it home and bag. But the fact of the matter is that I am buying pre-washed arugula almost every single week also, that it doesn't have to be either or. And the same thing, I love to have frozen meals that I've made and packaged and kept in my freezer. It almost becomes like a library of options that I can pick from. But I also, one of the sponsors of the show is Luvo, which is really has redefined what a frozen meal is to me, and they do a beautiful job. And so sometimes grab that. Like, you don't have to feel, I think there's a lot of guilt about taking shortcuts. And sometimes it's just a matter of giving yourself that permission and just making the best possible choice within that category. So it sounds like you're doing good.
I feel liberated.
Don't feel bad. And I think that whole sense of guilt, actually, you know, I don't believe in guilt at all when it comes to food. I think we get really wrapped up in that, and it's only, the result is only negative when you do.
Yeah. I will say one of the big, and you use the hashtag Ellie's Tips, right? Or
yeah,
Ellie Tips?
Ellie Tips,
Ellie
yeah.
Tips. One of the tips that I have done is I painted a very small section of our wall chalkboard paint, and then I write what I would like to cook for dinner each week, and then I make sure that I have that stuff. Like, I have canned beans, or I have quinoa, or I have whatever it is, and I don't always nail it. Like, I said this week, I said I was going to make turkey meatloaf, but I made turkey sliders instead, or whatever it is. But I had a vision. It's the days that I have no vision at all that I end up like
totally
spending $60 on dinner.
I do that too on Sundays. I sort of am like, I'm going to make three dishes this week, and then the rest of the time it's sort of leftovers or whatever, you know, I patch together, or what's in the freezer. But yeah, those three, what are those three things? And then you can kind of run with it because you know you have at least the ingredients.
And I've also, it's also like I've laid the groundwork for how much time I need to cook something. So I'm not saying on Tuesday when I know I don't get home until 6 or 7 o'clock at night, that's not the day that I'm making, you know, some long
lasagna.
Exactly. Oh, I'll make fresh noodle lasagna on that day. It's
like, not happening.
Okay, we have to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk all about your new show, and I just can't wait to ask you more questions.
Thanks.
Today's program is brought to you by the Farmers Market Farm Stand at 76 Montauk Highway, West Hampton, New York, providing local fruits and vegetables, heirloom tomatoes, local shellfish, handmade Vermont maple syrup, and our very own honey produced by our very own honeybees here on the east end of Long Island. Ask us about our imported cheese selection, as well as our artisanal bacon and sausage. And don't forget our locally baked breads and desserts. Open in April through the season, Farmers Market Farm Stand welcomes back our returning customers with the very best of all things locally grown and produced. Come by and visit on your way out east, just minutes from the West Hampton train station and the Hampton Jitney. Make sure to fill your weekend in the Hamptons with all that the East End's farms have to offer. The Farmers Market Farm Stand, again, is at 76 Montauk Highway in West Hampton, New York.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot, everyone. I am your host, Emily Peterson. Joining me live in the studio is Ellie Krieger. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So you have a brand new show on, do I say, it's American Public Television?
Yeah, so it's on public television.
Okay.
It's distributed. It's a little, it's
I was going to tag them on Twitter, and then I didn't want to get it wrong, because is it PBS?
Yeah, so the thing is that public television is sort of the umbrella term for many different distributors in the public television realm. PBS is one of those. So in New York City, my show is on PBS. In other cities, my show is on PBS. But then it's on the it's coming to the Create channel, which is a whole other public television network.
Which Lydia is on, right?
Lydia's I think so. Yes,
and like
she
America's
is.
Pet's Kitchen is that's like one of our go-tos Sunday after, like rainy Sunday afternoon go-tos is Create.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Create's fabulous. So is PBS. So I just, as a rule, just say public television.
Okay.
Public television show. Ellie's Real Good Food, and I have to say this has been. You know, as I mentioned during the launch party, which I'm so glad you were able to be there and celebrate, you know, it took 3 years to get this show going. I mean, it was a fascinating learning experience and really took a lot of determination and tenacity to get there. So I'm just to see it all happen, I'm literally floating on air, and it's exactly the show that I want it to be. I'm thrilled with it. I think it looks beautiful. It's really helpful. It's interesting. And I feel so relaxed and more fun. Kind of I can have more fun than ever before on TV, which I love that aspect of it, too.
I have had the privilege of being on TV a couple of times, and I love it. I'm like a kid at camp. I'm like, look at all the lights. and if it wasn't fun, I would feel like something's, you know, I got to do something different.
Yeah.
Like that feeling of doing something that you love is that it's so fun and, you know, is great. So walk me through what was the 3-year process? Like, how did you know, what was the germ of this idea that you were going to make the show?
Yeah. So the producer and I, and Julia Harrison, she's produced several other public television shows, and she produces Ming Tsai's show, for example,
who
I adore him and admire as well. And so she and I just sort of were like, let's make a show together. And we just sat down over some wine.
3 years ago, this is, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually met her through this organization that I was telling you about earlier called La Dame d'Escoffier, which is Women in Food and Hospitality. And so I had the fortune of meeting her through that organization. But anyway, so we sat down and we said, what kind of show do we want? And one of the things, I love my Food Network show, Healthy Appetite. I'm so grateful that was sort of launched me. And I did have a show before that, actually. But the Food Network really put me on the map in terms of, you know, a food person. But one of the things about it is that I felt I didn't really get to interact with lots of other people on the show. It was just me on camera. And I felt like I really wanted to connect with other people. And have a little bit more elbow room also to kind of make mistakes. And whereas my show was so beautifully edited, Healthy Appetite, if I made the slightest little misstep in my speech, we'd redo it. You know, we'd retake.
Has that informed, you said before the break, the idea that we have to be perfect? Was that like kind of playing in your head? Like, oh, like, I let it be a little.
Yeah,
a little
I want to be less perfect. It's more fun if you could be, if you could kind of run with it a little bit, then you can take risks.
I always joke with people, like, the more this show goes off the rails, the more people like it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The funnier it is, or the more, like, my dad, like, walked into, my dad is, I should thank him on the air for sponsoring Sharp and Hot. He is the farm stand in West Hampton Beach. Everybody heard the break halfway through. Last week, he was here picking up produce at a food importer in Bushwick, and he just, like, crashed the show. And that's what makes it authentic and real. Like, you're not the perfect person.
Right. You know? So getting to have more fun, getting to interact with people. So every episode, you know, I'm interacting with somebody who's, oh, one really great one was I went to this, someone's tiny kitchen, literally, because, you know, in New York, we have some seriously tiny kitchens.
I've lived in one. My girlfriend has a tiny kitchen with 2 burner stoves.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And she's a trained chef.
Yeah. And the thing is that you know, really good things can come in small packages, kind of thing. You don't need a lot of space. So it was fun to do that. But having that interaction, that was part of what we envisioned. And then it really, what took so long is that just getting sponsorship for the show, because you're selling something that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
Now that it exists, it's easier. But, you know, it becomes a chicken and an egg thing, just like most career advancements are, that you can't get experience until you have experience. Well, I had plenty of experience, but before sponsors sign on, they usually want to know, where's the show going to be seen? But I can't tell you that until I have the sponsor. So it just took some time there, and also learning the process of public television, which is, you know, a different process than I was accustomed to. So,
and you used Kickstarter, which Heritage Radio also did last summer. We raised money to relaunch our website and the live player and all of that. So at what point were you like, this, we're going to use Kickstarter, and what was the purpose behind that?
Yeah, so I had most of my sponsorship money, but I still had a gap. And I had been entertaining the idea. And then I thought, you know what? It's really in true form of public television, where the viewers can be the sponsors. I mean, that's what public television's all about anyway. And I know there were so many people on my Facebook page, on my Instagram, telling me, when are you going to have a show again? And so I knew that there was people really wanting this. And so these people, you guys listening, are the sponsors of the show as well. And the Kickstarter campaign, it was a lot of work. I mean, that was a whole thing in itself, because I had to shoot the video. I mean, you can do basically an iPhone video of yourself, but I wanted to give a sense of the professionalism of the project.
Sure.
And to do that, I had to shoot the video, then deciding on what the prizes should be for contributing and stuff, and then distributing them. I mean, I think it's really funny, because you think, oh, this is the glamorous life. Not because in order to send the packages out, the post office wouldn't pick them up because they were media mail. If I'm sending a media mail, you have to physically bring them in. So I live in New York City. How am I going to get these packages there? So I'm with my giant old lady shopping cart.
I love that you're doing this yourself. This is
no
like,
kidding.
This is the best picture.
Okay, so I took turns with my assistant and my husband. So my assistant, my husband, and I literally took turns bringing a ridiculous number of packages. We were loaded with a backpack full of packages, front pack, and this ridiculous shopping cart, bringing it to the post office. It was right around the holidays, so people were giving us like death stares as we're in this post office. But you know what? It was exhausting to fulfill all of that. But every single one of those envelopes was somebody who cared enough about this show to contribute their hard-earned money to it. And so that was extremely motivating. I felt great about it.
The listeners know that if they use the hashtag #SharpAndHot on Instagram, I will send them a copy of a book from my pile and piles and piles of cookbooks that I have at home that I just don't have enough time. And there are people who are listening right now who are like, she says that every week and I haven't gotten my book yet. And I know they're out there. And it's the same thing. It's like, I know that there's a single person attached to that who wants to engage. But you guys, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And were you like putting the mailing stickers on yourself?
Oh, well, my assistant and I, yeah, I mean, it was a homegrown operation.
And so, that has to translate as into like seeing the show now existing. Such a feeling of ownership. Like, yeah. It's yours.
Yeah, it's mine. And it also, I feel like it's everyone's. Like, I do feel, and I feel that way in general. I mean, I used to think I was a self-made woman. And now I sort of laugh at that. I realize that I don't think anyone's self-made. I mean, I had the fortune of being in a home where my parents told me I could do anything I set my mind to. And that is a gift that I was born to, right? So the same, that gift, you know, propels me forward all the time. And where would I be without that? I don't know. I wasn't given a lot of monetary support. That wasn't possible in my family. But I was given a lot of emotional and spiritual support. And the same thing with this show. It is my show, but I do feel the sense of community around it, that it's everyone's show.
Were there mentors in your life, either way back or more recently, that were like people that you could lean on when you were like, I don't know what to do next?
I mean, I would have to say my mom has been an incredible mentor to me. I don't know anyone who is stronger or has worked harder in their life or has encouraged me more than my mom. And maybe that sounds trite, but it's just plain true. And my mom, I refer to her all the time because I love that she says this about me. She says, you becoming a nutritionist is like a pyromaniac becoming a firefighter. So she completely knows me. That is it. If you're going to sum me up in one sentence, that is it.
That's so cute. Ellie Krieger, thank you so much for coming on Sharp and Hot. This has been an absolute pleasure. I feel like you and I could talk for hours and hours. And we didn't even really get into talking about nutrition and everybody's like what they deny themselves of out in the real world. But that is going to have to wait for another show.
Well, thank you, Emily.
You are a delight. I want to say again to everyone that if you use the hashtag sharpenhot on Instagram, I will send you my email address, which is chefemily@sharpenhot.com, and I will collect your mailing address, and I will send you a book from the pile of books that I have. And if you have the chance to go to iTunes and leave a review for the podcast on iTunes, it's one of the best ways for people who are looking for new things to listen to find out about us, and having all of you say that you enjoy the show and spending your half hour with me every Tuesday is worth your time. I would greatly appreciate it. I also want to give a quick shout out to Bonnie Plants, who is a Heritage Radio Network supporter. I killed all of my shishito peppers this weekend. I'll tell you. Do you garden? Do you grow your own food
No,
at all?
No, I have basil. I have some herbs. That's something.
So you know what it's like to keep something alive. That's a plant and can't tell you what it needs. So I did this project over last summer. I saved seeds from my own shishito peppers, and I like selected the right plant, and I took the right fruit, saved the seeds, planted them in potting soil and seed starting mix, had them under grow lights. They were doing fabulously. And then I moved them. I don't know what happened. I moved them into my garden about a week and a half ago, and they all just died. So I went out one day, and they were all just like, dead. So shishito peppers are not super easy to come by in plant form. You can find them at farmers markets. They're sort of like now popular with chefs, and some more. You can find the fruit more easily, but I really enjoy having them in the backyard. So I went to my local Agway, and they had a million different types of peppers and no shishitos. My father-in-law went to Home Depot and called me and was like, what was the type of pepper you're looking for? And I said, shishitos. And he said, oh, yeah, there's a whole thing of Bonnie Plants here. I think they have them. Yep. And sure enough, they had them. So when we hear the ads for Bonnie Plants, they have me in mind because I was like, oh, Bonnie Plants for the win. Thank you.
Yes.
So now I just have, and the plants like mine, when I transplanted them out, they were about an inch and a half tall. These plants are like 8 inches tall. So one of them has like a little tiny baby pepper on it. I'm way ahead of the game.
So already strong and
already
like ready
strong,
to thrive.
Ready to go. And it's one of those things where like I invest so much time and energy in it in March because it's cold and gray and I just want it to be summer and get everything going. And I'm like, am I going to do this again next year? It's so heartbreaking. I don't know the answer. But if I don't, I have Bonnie Plants because they will be available for purchase, strong and hardy and ready to feed us. Okay, so I want to thank Jack for engineering the show and being the executive producer of Heritage Radio Network. Nice Peter Shukoff for the theme song. My producer, Colleen Leahy, all the way down there in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much for orchestrating this interview. I want to say hello to listener Chris, who reached out on Instagram. He's a pastry chef in Alexandria, Virginia, who makes the most beautiful pastries. I was like, look at this. He emailed me and said he listens to Heritage Radio Network when he's baking bread in the morning at the restaurant. So hello to Chris. Thank you everyone so much for listening. Until next week, keep playing with fire and knives.
Sharp and hot with Chef Family. Sharp and hot with Chef Family.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking, and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world, or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.